What's up, everybody? What's up? What's happening? What's happening? Welcome. Welcome to the Keynote Cafe, everybody, with your host, Lavelle Powell, composer, producer, arranger, film composer, screenwriter, what have you. Lavelle Powell, everybody. Thank you for being on the show today, for coming by to take part in another episode with me. I just want to thank you all for your continued support. Believe me when I say that it does not go unappreciated. You guys are awesome. I just thank you very much, man. The Keynote Cafe is consistently gaining momentum, popularity, and there's some very big things that we've been working on in between episodes, and I look forward to being able to share that stuff with you once those things are finalized. But I am not going to waste time. I'm going to get started, jump right into this episode. On this episode, we have a wonderful gentleman by the name of Ollie Silk. Ollie Silk is a UK-based composer, producer, songwriter, artist. This guy is one of the most prolific individuals that I think I've heard in a long time. I mean, when I say that, I mean, it's an understatement. This guy is a great artist, and I just can't wait for you to listen to and watch the interview that I have with him. He's just one of the most breathtaking artists in many years, as far as I'm concerned. I enjoyed the interview with him immensely, and again, I look forward to you guys enjoying it as well. What we're going to do, we're going to jump right into this thing. We're going to start off with one of the songs from his latest project entitled Six. The song is called New Bounce. We're going to bounce to that. Hey, how about that? We're going to bounce to that. And then from that, we're going to jump straight into the interview with Ollie Silk. My man, Ollie Silk. Stay tuned. Thank you. So Ollie, so thank you very much for taking out time to talk to me, to come onto the show. I really appreciate that deeply.
Oh man, thank you so much for having me, Livell. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure, man. I watched a few of your shows and stuff, and it's all good. I watched the Brian Culbertson one, and very interesting listening, man.
Yeah. I'm very happy with how the show's going, and it seems to be gaining in more popularity. So, you know, of course, with your appearance, that should help it gain a lot further, you know? So I'm happy that you're here.
Oh, bless your heart, man. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I had a chance to listen to some of your work, and I'm going to tell you, man, I think that you are a fascinating artist, man. You're great, man. You're awesome.
Oh, man. Thank you so much, bro. I appreciate that.
No problem. I love your work, man. You know, and I was wondering, because you have such a nice overall smoothness to your music, right? You have that the funk, you know, all interwoven into a lot of those tracks, and some beautiful chord work, beautiful chord changes, right? So I love that stuff. So I was wondering, who are there any artists, you know, who served as inspirations and influences for you?
Yeah. Oh, sure thing, man. Many. Grew up with the jazz, funk, and soul, you know, in the house all the time, you know, elder brother, just loved that stuff, you know, had records from a very young age, you know. So when I was like 2 or 3 years old, I was just being, you know, it was just going in there, man, as like a sponge, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think some of my family's favorites was like everything from like Quincy to like Kenny Loggins and Michael McDonald and the Doobie Brothers and Steely Dan and that kind of stuff. That was my foundation and those types of artists. And then of course, you know, George Duke, Lauber, Joe Sample, Bob James, are the main men in my book, you know, they always were. So they were my big keyboard influences, definitely, you know.
I was going to say all the keyboard legends, you know, and those guys made an indelible mark, you know, in the industry. So they've influenced myself as well, many of them, you know. So that's great to hear that, man. That's wonderful. Joe Sample was one of my, probably one of my all-time favorite keyboardists, among others. Joe Sample, I love his style.
Oh, man.
Yeah. That was awesome.
He was so unique, you know, and because he you could hear the blues, you know, it ran through everything he did, the blues, but he just transcended that so much. And he definitely had a different vibe to all the other guys that I mentioned, you know, very different to George Duke, different to Herbie, but just an effortless like groove to his playing. Definitely.
Yeah, it definitely was effortless. He's left behind some very, very great pieces of work for everybody to admire for countless generations, you know. So how did you get your start in the industry?
I got my start in kind of this genre, in this business, in the smooth jazz business, whatever you want to call it. I think that probably came around gradually, obviously. It wasn't like an overnight thing, but I was making music from the age of I was making music from the age of about 13, but like I would say properly from about the age of 18 or 19, like, you know, first recording setup and things like that. Yeah. And so I made a couple of records with a buddy of mine who we'd met in college. And we made some tracks. We just were messing around. You know, I had a job, like a desk job at the time. And my buddy was just about to go off to college. So we had a summer where we were just messing around and we made some tracks and didn't really think much more of it. You know, we just, you know, I didn't think, oh, we're going to make some tracks and we're going to try and get a record deal, you know, that sort of thing. But after we'd made like 3 or 4 songs, I could, you know what, it's so patchy now, but someone heard it. Someone who we knew someone at a label in London. And they said, you should, you know, put this on a CD. I'll take it to them. You know, you never know. And sure enough, they went to this label in London called Time Warp Records. They already had some kind of jazz, pseudo jazz funk stuff, Brit jazz stuff. And they dug it. And they said, you need to, you know, can you record a whole album of this? And we were like, oh my God. Like we just spent months doing three tracks messing around. Now we got to do 10 songs. What? Yeah. Okay. Like all of a sudden it's got serious, you know? So my buddy was like, well, I got to go to college. And he was going to college like 300 miles in the north of England. So we had to work really quickly. And between like June and when he went in September, we bust this record out. And it came out under on Time Warp Records early the following year. And it was we were called Sugar and Silk. He was Danny Sugar, Ollie Silk, obviously. Mm-hmm. The record was called Fact or Friction, and it laid the way really for what my style was going to be. It was more raw than what I ended up doing later on, but it was kind of loops and beats, with just some, you know, with some nice smooth chord stuff a la, you know, Joe Sample, and just and hooky melody lines really. Yeah. And it was okay, man. I mean, it did okay. We got good radio play in the UK with it, in Europe, and we ended up doing another record a couple of years later, a bit more polished this time. We had a sax player on there. We had some, you know, I mean, that first album, I don't know, did we even have guitars on it? It was like literally keyboards, bass, because my buddy played the bass. Yeah. And beats, and that was it, you know, and loads of synth stuff. And then by the second record, we matured a bit. We got sax player involved. And then that led on to something else. The sax player I'd found, which was a guy in London, a young cat called James Vargas. Once we'd finished our record, he was like, I want to do more recording, you know, and writing. So I started working with him, and we did a record for him, which then... ended up coming out on Tripping in Rhythm Records. This is moving forward a few years, like 2004, I think. That through one person to the next person managed to get to Tripping in Rhythm Records, who I'm not sure if you know Tripping in Rhythm Records. They have lots of artists now, smooth jazz artists, including myself still. But the CEO is in the UK, so there was a nice tie there. So I went to visit. I went to meet him for dinner. I had some stuff with James, and he was like, "Yeah, I really like this. I really want to sign it." So he went ahead and signed James. We started doing touring then. That year, 2004, we came to LA for the first time and did Catalina Island Jazz Festival, and we did Thornton Winery and stuff in California.
Yeah.
Then came back and did it again in 2005 off the, you know, still promoting that record. This was like, I mean, I'm making it sound like it all happened so far, but, you know, it was like a huge learning curve. Like I'd never been to the States before. Yeah. I'd never been an MD before for an artist. It was like huge. So really like huge learning curve. And then following year, James didn't want to do it anymore. So he was kind of out. He decided to back out of the scene and do his own thing. He was doing a lot of pop music. He was doing... now, what was the artist he was with? Boy George. You know Boy George, Culture Club? Class from the 80s? Yeah. So yes, he was in that band, right? Oh. So that was a big gig. That was world tour stuff. So he went off and he did that.
Yeah.
And so I just started writing. And I had the contact with Tripping Records at that time. And I said, well, if I maybe come up with something, would you maybe think about doing a record? Maybe I could do a record. So sure enough, that was cool. I cut a few tracks. They liked it. They gave me the go ahead to do the rest of the album. And that was my first record, which then came out in 2006, which was called So Many Ways. And that was the beginning for me.
Wow, man. That's awesome, man. You know, and you know, you mentioned earlier about your first album was more rural and things like that. You know, I find that throughout your career it's constant evolution. You know, you're always finding out more things, you know, that you're going to bring into your next project, you know. So it's a constant evolutionary process, man. You know, so that's what you're talking about is exactly how it's supposed to happen. You know, you just keep growing and you get better and better. You know,
you do, man. I mean, you know as well as I do, you know, when you never stop learning for starters, when you're a producer or whether you're, you know, if you're a player, you know, you put yourself into situations where you get inspired by other people and then, you know, you pick things up along the way. And yeah, like you say, it's funny you should say that, but yeah, I feel like with every record, there's something in there. And it might be something obvious for like the average listener, or it might be something really technical or like a chordal like voicing that I've kind of come up. Oh, that's nice. You know, something I've found, and like then that record has got that all over it, you know.
Right. And sometimes it's just it's stuff that no one will probably notice but you, right?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely right. Yeah, so
That
a few of my musician friends always pull me up on it. They're always like, oh, yeah, that's an Ollie Silk thing, man. You do it like three chords in a row, like whatever it might be, like this progress. Is that an Ollie Silk thing? I'm like, oh, man, I've got to try and change something, you know.
That's all it is. That's the way it goes, man. So, you know, was there a point throughout all this whole process you spoke about, was there a point where it hit you like, hey, you know what? This is what I'm meant to be doing. This is it right here.
I mean, I don't think that happened till quite a bit later on when I thought like this can be, you know, this could be my life career, you know.
Yeah.
I think when you're a kid, when you're like, you know, early 20s, you're just, I mean, I'd do anything just to go back there for a couple of days, you know, and just feel that, you know, that passion that runs through everything you do. I mean, not that I'm out of passion, but you know, you mellow out when you get a bit older and it becomes more, you know, it becomes more of a business. It becomes more structured. You know, you've got deadlines, you've got stuff you got to do, but when you're young, you're just creative. It's just flowing through you. So, I think at the time you just go along with the tide. I wasn't thinking, man, this is my career now. You know, I mean, obviously I worked at a job from the age of 17 to about the age of 22.
Yeah.
I was working a desk job and I did a remix. That was my first big gig for Cisco. Remember Cisco?
Yeah.
Unleash the Dragon. You remember that track?
Yes,
Unleash
sir.
The Dragon. Yeah.
Okay.
So I did one of the remixes of that, right?
Wow.
I won't bore you with the story too much, but the guy that mixed the first Sugar and Silk album, he was a big producer in the 80s. He did a lot of British pop and soul artists, and he then worked at Universal Records. So he was in charge of doing remixes. And remember, man, in the late 90s, remixes were huge, man. Like every CD single went out with like six remixes on it.
Yeah.
And so he was working for Universal doing these remixes, and or he was responsible for these remixes. Uh-huh. And he threw some my way, which was like big deal. I was only 20. So I did Cisco on Unleash the Dragon. That was my first cut. I'd done about three and they got rejected. And then I did this one and it got accepted. I'm like, man, like,
wow,
what? So then off the back of that, I got maybe three or four pop remixes, but at the time they were very well paid, you know, because it was a big deal. So at that point I was like, okay, you know, I quit my job at that point, mainly for time reasons, not necessarily because I was like rolling in the dough. It was kind of like, I'm doing okay, but like, I've got no time to do these remixes. So that at that point, 2001 and around that time was when I thought I'll make a go of it, but I don't think it was until about 2007 where I was like, yeah, I'm safe now, you know.
Yeah,
I can make the rent now, you know.
That's the way it goes. Yeah, and a lot of people don't know, man. They don't know the as successful as you are, and especially with what they see, you know, listening to your music and stuff like that. They don't always know the hard work and the struggles and the sacrifices and all the stuff that you're making to get that success. You know, they just see what they see, you know, so
exactly.
Yeah. It's great for them to know, even for like from this show, what some of the real process is like a lot of times, you know, because they don't know. You know,
they don't know, but you know, that's the magic of it, I guess, because like, you know, everyone, you know, you hopefully make it look easy, don't you? When you put a product out there, it's effortless to listen to something, but like, yeah, it's nice for people to understand the, some of the process at least of what goes into it. I mean, you know, without being a producer, you know, or an artist, you don't know exactly the minute details of what happens. But I think, do you know what? I think nowadays, I think back in, back 20, 30 plus years ago, I don't think people really like there. It really was like a record was cut and no one got told about how it was done. It was very magical process. Yep. But now it's like with social media and everyone's got a much more in-depth view of, and they see what happens. You know, you're putting videos out there. They can see studios. They know what's going on a little bit more, which I guess in a way is pretty cool. I think that's quite nice. You know,
it is. It is good. It gives them some additional insight that they did not have not that long ago. You know,
sure.
So your song, You Bring Me So Much Joy, is that a fairly recent release or?
Yeah, that is. That's actually off the last record, Six. So that song, in fact, I remember it well, man. I won't go into it too much, but the vocalist on it. On the song is a lady named Elle Kato. Wonderful singer who I've been working with and I've known for maybe 4 or 5 years. And she's Jamiroquai's backing vocalist. She does a lot of great pop stuff. I think Jamiroquai is probably her biggest gig. She's been all around the world with them. And she at the time was dating my bass player, Orofo. They've been together quite some time, but never met her. And then eventually he got her onto a set of gigs we did in Europe, jazz festival. And just a great girl. We just got on like a house on fire. And I really dug the way that she approached songs and singing. And then finally we got together. Because, you know, I always like to put a vocal track on the records, at least one, sometimes a couple, but more recently it's just been the one vocal track. But I, you know, because I grew up probably like you did, not just listening to instrumental music, but listening to, you know, Luther and Jeffrey Osborne and all the soul, you know, the crossover guys.
Exactly.
And George Duke, obviously, you know, so I always like to put vocals on my records. So in this case, I had this backing track, sent it to her, and she wrote something over the top and then came over and recorded it. And I just remember that the day she came over, it was just before we kind of knew about the virus, and it was like December 19, so it was just before everything came out. But I'd been so ill, like so iller than ever before. And I don't know to this day whether it was that, you know, or whether that's too early for me, you know, for us to get it. You know, it's always been a question mark, but and that was, and I could see that was on the calendar and it was coming up. And I was just like, surely I'm going to get better by this time. You know, this is in like 2 weeks, but this thing just didn't go away. And it was everything, you know, you expect the virus to be. It was like, couldn't get out of bed, couldn't smell, couldn't taste, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm still to this day kind of convinced that I had it some, you know, early.
Yeah.
You know, like 3 days before, I was like, I've got to cancel this session, man, because like, you know, I just feel so rough. And I spoke to her and she was like, oh man, you know, this could be our last opportunity. It's all coming out now. We may not be able to hang together and stuff like this. Yeah. So I was like, look, just give me 48 hours and let me see how I feel. And it turned around. This thing went away. It went away as quickly as it came. Just woke up one day. Oh my God. Like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. Like, praise the Lord. I'm good. Mm-hmm. So I called her up. I said, look, I'm feeling better. Let's just give it 24 hours and we can do this. And so she came over and, you know, I kept my distance. You know, I'm facing this way for the whole session, right? Facing the console. She's like back there facing that way. I'm like, right, don't get near me. Don't touch me. All right. Let's just get this down because the record had to come out. There was a deadline on the record. So if we didn't get it done, this was like December the 17th. I was like, it's going to be Christmas, New Year.
Right,
you know, there's things going around about the virus. And So we cut it. And I'm just, I love listening to it now. I still haven't played it out live because of the virus. Still haven't done a gig with it. Really, really want to play it live, man. But it's a great vibe. It's a really nice song.
much joy.
Song, and she definitely does a wonderful job on there vocally, you know. And so when it comes to picking out an artist to perform vocals on your music, is there certain qualities or certain criteria that you're looking for them to meet?
That's a good question. Yeah, I mean, I've got to have been, you know, turned on to them in some way, yeah, shape or form in the past, or, and you know, I guess in general, the people that I use, I would have maybe worked with recently, and we would have had a, you know, we would have just clicked, you know.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of the latest record. Like, I just did a thing with Kelly Minucci. I played keyboards with him at a festival. So, you know, and I just really love the way I've always loved, yeah, the way he approaches music, but like to meet him and hang with him and stuff, then it became obvious, like, man, if I write a track, it'd be great to get him on something. And he's on my label as well, so we had that connection. So it's just about kind of more about connections.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously like really digging something about that, you know, the uniqueness about that artist. You know, Jeff Kashua is another player who I've just wanted to work with for so long. And finally we worked and we did something on this record. But even going back, like Peter White and Steve Cole and Nick Colleone and these guys, you know, just people that I not only respect musically, but just have had a great time hanging with or playing on the same stage as or whatever it might be. So, yeah.
Okay. That's great, man. That's great. Cause I mean, I guess everybody has their some people, you know, there are others who they may not know exactly what they just know. As you mentioned, you know, they know them from another project or they've just seen their work and they're like, well, you know what? She'll be great or he'll be great on my project. But I know some people have criteria and it's always interesting to see people's take on what their process is and what they look for when they're choosing an artist to work with.
Yeah.
You know, so that's great, man. And she's definitely, she does a fabulous job with that song, man. I mean, it's almost like you had her in mind when you wrote it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, it fitted perfectly. And it was a coincidence more than anything, because I'd kind of written the bare bones of the chords and the backing track quite a long time before. Yeah. I hadn't thought of her at that point. But yeah, it's definitely up her street, because she's got that, almost like old Etta Jamesy kind of vibe at times, yeah. You know, real, yeah. like rich, like... Yeah. Really ballsy kind of vibe at times, yeah. You know, but she can also be quite girly. And she's definitely a different type of singer than I've worked with before because of that. I've definitely, you know, smooth jazz is a thing where like it kind of suits very sweet, feminine vocals. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of been the route that I've gone down before. But with her, it was much more a much more gospel-y kind of performance, I thought. She absolutely nailed it. And yeah, I highly suggest anyone who's listening to go and check her out. So she spells her first name E-L-L-E-L and then C-A-T-O, Kato. She's all over social media. So go check her out.
I'll definitely be looking her up, man, for sure. Mm-hmm. She's fabulous. You talked earlier about the COVID, you know, thing. And obviously it sort of did, had a major impact on several industries, probably very few to the degree that it did, the entertainment industry, mm-hmm. You know, so, a lot of, good and bad, I guess, came out of it. But I was wondering, from your perspective, do you think that overall the impact of the virus on the entertainment industry, do you think that, that maybe it benefited the industry to a degree more than maybe hurt?
Ooh, that's another tough question. I would say no. I'm trying to think of ways that it has benefited the industry. I can't think of any right now apart from perhaps, you know, perhaps on a personal level, you could say that, you know, it's been great for artists to spend more time with their families. You know, I mean, I know there was, and I've spoken to some guys who really appreciated that, you know, because, you know, they were gigging way more than I was, you know, and I was out, you know, an average amount of time, but these guys were doing 200 shows a year, you know.
Yeah.
So I think they've appreciated the downtime, but I'm clutching at straws to try and figure out a way that this has been good, you know, because it's been nice that we've seen some great social media stuff. We've seen some great video and great distance concerts and stuff like that. And that's been nice, but you know, it pales in comparison to mm-hmm. to the real thing. You know, I think people are just, man, that people just want shows. I get messages all the time on social media. I mean, I know people are feeling it. They really, really want to see live music again, and I can't wait to give it to them, you know.
Yeah, I'm a huge live music fan, and you know, the reason that I ask that is because it depends on the person, you know. It depends on what specific things that person is involved with. if you're a person who you love and you have that passion for live performances, and you know something like this happens, you're not necessarily going to feel very good about it. You're not going to think that it's benefiting the industry per se. You know, but if you're someone who may be on a more technical side, you know, maybe it kind of brought some new ideas to your mind being shut down that you may not have thought of prior to it, you know. So I think it depends on a person, but I just like to ask certain things to get different people's thoughts on it. You know, there's actually no wrong answer to that question.
No, exactly. of course not. Of course there's not. You know, everybody's experience of this is different. Of course you're right. And I know for every guy that's really going through the mill that doesn't have any work, you know, there's people who may have found other niches to get some other more creative stuff done. I mean, again, from a personal level, I've been quite lucky because I had good success at radio last year. So, you know, when we were locked down, I had a number one, which was great, you know, and so I knew that was going to be some success from last year. And I also am a producer. So, you know, I've been producing other people. I've got a fairly regular day job, and I have had for like 5 years doing music for online apps, slot machine apps, you know, gambling apps and land-based slot machines. I've been doing it for years. Mm-hmm. And that never stopped. In fact, that industry is like kind of been pretty good because it's, you know, everyone's been picking up their phones and having a little go on some slot machines, man. So, you know, and I really enjoy that. It makes me do genre specific music, you know, and it's kind of like advertising. It's similar sort of sync stuff. So I, from a personal level, I've been lucky, but I understand that it's been hell for some people who are almost primarily gigging musicians.
Mm-hmm. You actually brought out another element to it that a lot of folks don't think about as far as how others can perceive the good side of it regarding the downtime and maybe kind of helping some artists put some priorities to kind of reprioritize and rethink about, you know, maybe how they were doing things before. Maybe this kind of helped put things for them in the proper order, you know. So you brought out a very, very, very good point in what you said about artists who have appreciated the downtime and you know, it kind of helped them kind of think a little bit and more time with family and things like that. Yeah. So that's something that I don't think enough talk takes place about regarding the impacts of it in that way. So that's an excellent answer to that question. So I hadn't even thought about that.
Well, you know, I've been thinking about that for some time. I mean, yeah, for me personally, it's been great. Of course, you know, everyone's had, you know, had times during this last year that they've got cabin fever and they're like, I just want to get out of here. Of course, I understand that. You know, I've got two very small children and, you know, there's four of us. I've got the dog here. So there's, you know, we've got a family of five in our house. But I think, you know, 95% of the time, the wife and I just sort of sat back and said, man, this has been so nice. We've both, you know, the kids have had access to both of us. Like, but whereas in previous years, man, you know, it breaks a person's heart when they have to leave their, you know, 4-year-old girl to go away for 3 weeks, you know, and they don't want you to go. It's like the worst. So like to be there and just hang with them and see them through the year has been a huge plus for me. And I'm sure for many other musicians too. But if you don't like your family, then maybe not so much.
Exactly. Huh? Spending too much time at home, you know. Exactly, man. So what would you say is your greatest strength as an artist? And all of your talents, you know, combined, you know, what would you say is your greatest strength?
Wow, these questions just getting harder and harder.
Oh, sorry.
You're killing me here. My greatest strength, man, that's hard to tell.
Your greatest asset, you know, what do you think? What do you think has served you well?
Well, Okay, my greatest asset. My greatest. Okay, so as a keyboard player, maybe just conscientiousness and good work. You know, good work ethic. You know, being a keyboard player, you get put under a lot of pressure situations when you're playing in bands and playing for other people and your house band and your MD and this sort of thing. So conscientiousness is something that I never was, but I had to learn, because if you don't, if you're, you know, if you haven't got, as you know, if you haven't got a good work ethic and you're trying to coordinate a band or, you know, or run a band, then, you know, you ain't going to show up late for that. You know, that's what I'm saying. So that's something I've learned, and I'm proud of the fact that, you know, I used to be kind of lazy when I was younger, and that taught me to get my act together a little bit. And, you know, if I was gonna, because I also like to take charge of situations too. So that the combination of taking charge and bit, you can't be lazy when you're taking charge. You have to lead by example, I guess. So yeah, I think as a keyboard player, definitely conscientiousness and work ethic. And I think as an artist, that's hard. I want to say it's like just a unique style of playing, but that isn't something that I got taught. It's just something that's innate to me. You know, I always played with this style. Many people have said to me, you know, that it's quite unique, that it's, for, you know, obviously very, it's very soulful, very lyrical, you know. It's not still, I pride myself on not being stilted, you know. It's not, you know, it's not quantized, it's not rigid, it's as loose and flowing and lyrical as it can be. And, you know, yeah, I've obviously done some work on that with technique, but, you know, that's just something that's just me, you know, I guess.
And those very things that you named off will go into may answer my next question. So basically all those things you named off, would those be the things that you would like your fans to be like their biggest takeaway from all that you do, you know, to appreciate, to they may not know all the work you do, but they can certainly, by listening to your music, have a good idea of all the hard work you put into it and all the detailed stuff like that, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I think even beyond that, like just knowing that it comes from my heart, you know, it comes from my soul. As I know, it's kind of cliche, but you know, it really does. You know, I don't think it's fair that you would give a product that's not really, you know, really you, and really, you know, it's not half-hearted. It's you're fully engaged in what you're doing. No, I mean, not everybody's going to like it, but you wouldn't, but I never would want to be accused of, you know, having thrown together something that's, you know, sort of a bit lazy or whatever. So, and I think that I get that, you know, when I come to the States, especially when I come to the States, especially, and I tour around cities that I would, you know, had I not been in this business, would never have probably ever gone, been able to go to, you know, going around the South and, you know, meeting people that, you know, have had a very different life to me. You know, we're very different people, but we just share, you know, they start talking to me after a show and we only have to name check a few artists and then we're friends forever, you know, you know, we share that, like this common thread of jazz, funk and soul. And it's like a white guy from suburban England and, you know, a black woman in her 60s from Atlanta can come together, and they've had completely different upbringings and lives, but share this passion for the similar music, and it moves us both in the same way. That's about as, you know, that's about as cool and magical as music can be, I think.
That's one of the things, maybe one of the primary things about the arts, you know, that I really appreciate it, that people from various backgrounds, the arts and particularly music and things like that, that you you find a lot of common ground, a lot of commonality, things that you share, you know, because you like the same type of music, you know, and you appreciate it the same way. So the arts is one of the few categories that really everybody has that common ground, you know, despite the background, you know. So that's a great point.
And you know, and it's not at the expense of how can I put it? You know, if you appreciate your type of art and other people do, but you don't begrudge anyone for liking something different. You know, right. It's not like politics. Right. It's completely opposite.
Exactly, man.
You know, it's, like you say, you can say, well, yeah, you dig that. I'm not really feeling it, but I ain't going to judge you for it. You know, if you like, you like your country music or your dance music or whatever it might be, but I you know, this is our community. This is what move. This is the music that moves me. And then it just speaks through whoever you are, wherever you come from.
Exactly. So are there any words of advice you would have for someone who's aspiring to be in the industry or whatever, whether an artist or a producer or what have you, any kind of words of guidance you can offer?
Oh, invest in cryptocurrency. I think, well, I mean, it, again, you know, it comes back, it's slightly cliche. It comes back to this idea of, you know, you want to pull influences from people that you listen to and that you admire. And of course you want to immerse yourself in listening to music because, yeah. You know, you need to know how it's made, you know.
Yeah.
But you really need to, you know, like I focused on not really caring too much about copying too much, you know, and just kind of, you know, I wasn't the guy that I didn't sit there for my formative years transcribing solos, you know, and then playing them and knowing every, oh yeah, that I'm going to have that Herbie lick and I'm going to have that Chick Corea lick and I'm going to have that lick. I never really did that. I picked little bits of everything, but then, mm-hmm. you know, when certainly my approach to soloing is very, I think very organic, very, you know, it's spontaneous, which it should be, you know, it's not like, well, I'm going to string together a selection of 12 different licks that other people made up and I'm going to put those together and make my solo. And I hear people do that a lot. That's okay. You know, you mm-hmm. do your thing. That's fine. But, you know, I think it should be more spontaneous than that. It should be made up on the spot, you know, and for better or worse, that's kind of what I do. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't, but you know,
no, I agree. I agree with you because for one thing, you're playing as you feel it, you know, as it's coming out of you. It's that those are the most honest. Those notes that you're playing are the most honest interpretations of what you're feeling, you know, at that moment. So I 100% agree with you, you know, and yeah, kudos to anyone who has their own process. If it's different, you know, because it works for them, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
You know, but for me, yeah, the spontaneity is definitely a must. You know, that's how it has to be. You know.
So people thrive off of that. People know they can see it. They can see what you're doing. They can see it in your eyes, and they can feel it.
Yeah, that's it, man. So, any new projects? Any new collaborations? Anything on the horizon?
Now then, what are we doing at the moment? So, I've got a few things bubbling around right now, actually. It's stuff I've been working on. I've been working for a couple of years with a great guitar player called Roberto Restuccia, who's an Italian guitar player who lives in the UK. In fact, he's from the UK, but his lineage is Italian. Fabulous bluesy guitar player, kind of Jeff Gola, Paul Brown, really, really great, all about the tone. And so, yeah, we've been working together for at least 2 years on his project, and he's just about to hit the Billboard chart now with his first single, Arrival. So that I'm hoping actually when the chart gets published tomorrow, that should be on the chart, or at least near the chart. So I'm excited about that. He's a good dude, so he's one to watch out for. Roberto Restuccia, nice smooth album. You know, again, very chilled. It's not full. You know, it's not like full of production. It's just a nice. Put it on in the background, relax and enjoy the tone of it, you know. So that's cool. And I've also been working with an American sax player named Justin Lancaster, who's out of now, where's he from? So I think he lives in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Okay. He's originally from Texas, I think. But yeah, a young guy, he's not an old guy. Great sax player, kind of reminds me of it's kind of Jackie and Joyner, Marcus Anderson type player, very punchy, but got some really nice licks, really nice tone. So yeah, he hit me up about 18 months ago and I cut four tracks with him. We co-wrote four tracks. Okay. And the first one of those, mixed by Nicholas Cole, a great mix engineer and keyboard player, of course, in the States there. So yeah, I produced it and that's just gone for ads at radio as well. So yeah, that one's without a doubt. So Justin Lancaster, another one to watch out for. Yeah. So I got three projects on the charts because I've got my single out at the moment, which is called Hurry Up and Wait. That's the second single from the last project, which is kind of a hip hop kind of influence thing. It wasn't one I was expecting to be a radio single, but my radio guy at the label, he was like, yeah, man, I dig that so much. I've got to put it out. Okay, cool. Wouldn't have been my choice, but I'll go with it. So yeah, that's out as well. So we've got three out at the moment. So fingers crossed, we could have a top three. That would be cool.
That would be awesome, man. That'd be a great thing. A great accomplishment, man. That's awesome. So I appreciate that, man. I appreciate you taking time out to talk to me and let me pick your brain and kind of get in there and get some of that good knowledge out of there. I appreciate that, you know, and I'm sure.
Oh, man, it's a pleasure, man. Absolute pleasure. Thanks for great questions. You got me thinking, man. And I like that. It's great.
Cool, man. Cool. I appreciate that. Hey, brother, you stay blessed, man. You and your family, man, continue doing well. And hey, man, hopefully we can stay in touch, you know, and just keep me updated. Anything I can do to help let everybody know about what you're doing, just let me know.
Oh, of course, man. Thank you so much for having me on the Keynote Cafe, Lavelle. I mean, I really appreciate it. And yeah, I'll look out for more good stuff, man. I love to listen to other artists being asked good questions. It's great because, you know, even for me as an artist, you don't get to hear that so often. So it's a treat, man. I like to kick back and put my earbuds in and listen to that stuff. So it's
I'm an overall admirer of people's talents, man. That's me. You know, when I ask questions, it's strictly from the admirer standpoint. You know, someone who appreciates what you're doing. You know, and I just love getting people's thoughts on what they do, why they do it, what drives them. I love that, you know, and I know that the fans and your fans and those who listen to the show, they would love that to hear that as well, you know. So that's what I seek to get, you know.
Bless you, man. I appreciate you, man. That's a really nice thing to say, man. But thank you. Yeah, thanks once again for having me, man. And
no problem.
Yeah, let's catch up soon, man, when we're back in the game, when we're back. Yeah, for sure.
We can get in a little bit more closer proximity, huh?
Exactly, man. Yeah.
All right, my brother.
All right, buddy.
God bless you, man.
Take care of yourself, Lavelle. All the best to you.
You too, man. Wow. Wow. Did you enjoy that? Did you enjoy that as much as I did? Did you? Tell the truth now. Hey. Wow, man. Ollie Silk, my brother, you are a tremendous talent, man. I mean, I know you probably hear that all the time, but you are definitely a tremendous talent, man. And I enjoyed the conversation that you and I had during the interview. Lots of very good topics covered and some very good advice shared from a gentleman who has exposure to so many different venues and so many different things in the industry. You know, so he has like somewhat of an insider's viewpoint on the industry and the ups and downs and the ins and outs. And I'm very grateful that he saw fit to share that stuff with us and with you guys. I want to let you know that, there's some major things in the works for the Keynote Cafe. And I will keep you updated as time progresses and as those things near completion and finalization. We're exploring doing at least some live shows for now and eventually maybe going into a live broadcast. But we're still working out the details of that. But that and many other things are in the works that we're trying to do to make your experience watching this show as good and as great as it can be, right? I want to let you guys know again about www.thekeynotecafe.com. You can go to that website to get any new information on things that we're doing. You can learn more about the show for those who may be watching the Keynote Cafe for the first time and those who may Just want to know more about me. We have also the Keynote Cafe membership, which contains the 6 Keynote Cafe membership plans that you can take advantage of. Those are the money that you pay every month allows you to get a certain amount of perks that comes with depending on the tier that you pick. I advise you to take advantage of it. You'll get all kinds of perks, including projects before it even officially gets released. It gets released, you'll have it in your hands already, and you will have access to any new contests and different things that we have going on. You'll be able to know about it and take part in it. And there's so much going on. And just to let you know that the money that you pay monthly goes to the upkeep of the Keynote Cafe and the improvement of the Keynote Cafe and all the things that we do that are intended to maximize your experience, your enjoyment of the show. I thank you for all that you've done thus far. We've been able to upgrade equipment and a number of other things, but your continued support enables us to bring you the absolute best of us. So, hey, what else is there? Oh, we're on social media, Instagram at The Keynote Cafe. We're also on Facebook at The Keynote Cafe. Just look us up. You'll get new information. We normally try to stay active on that, on those pages with any information that we think is of interest to you, any news, any birthdays, or any other information related to The Keynote Cafe and artists in the entertainment industry that we think you would love to be made aware of. So those things are there for your enjoyment in between episodes. We want you to know that we appreciate everything that you do on behalf of the show. We definitely appreciate you tuning in. We look forward to giving you more artist interviews and more information that you can use. Anything that we can do to help artists who are trying to get into this business or have gotten into the business, but maybe encountering some hangups and want some advice on some potential steps you can take to get around those hurdles and keep moving toward your ultimate goal in the industry. You know, we try to provide you with that stuff as well. So anything we can do to help new and inspiring artists, those who are already in the industry and just need a little bit of advice along the way, we try to, you know, direct you to some resources that can help you. I would like to thank you very much for tuning in. And we look forward to seeing you next time. And we're going to have another special guest, very special guest on the show. And I look forward to entertaining you with that interview as well. Okay. Hey, so until next time, we will see you. I love you. Care about you deeply. You guys have a blessed and wonderful day. All right. Bye.